From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of the Midnight Movie Cowboys for 2016. We are back from our break. I'm joined by the whole gang is here. Stuart in Australia. Say hello, Stu.
Hello, America.
Hello.
And the world.
And John in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado. Say hello, John.
Hello, world and America.
And we have a returning guest, one of our more popular episodes.
Our most popular episode.
Our most popular episode. Paul Bishop, the writer. And you can check his website out, paulbishopbooks.com. His new book, Lie Catchers, is out. Say hello, Paul.
Hello, Paul.
Yeah. And so we said on that episode that we were going to have you back for this movie.
You threatened me.
Yeah, I did. You know, I threatened you. I learned from the best, reading your books on how to...
Hannah sent you a MP3 of the Body Count song Smoke Pork and said, you better turn up.
Smoke pork.
But you threatened me that we were going to come back and we were going to shift focus and talk about our love for Rocky Balboa.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. There's nobody here, I think, who doesn't love Rocky movies. Am I correct in that assumption?
You're correct. Yeah. I begrudgingly admit.
No, pot four.
Quite frankly, if we made 100 of these, I'd be in the theater every time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would too.
I spent last 4th of July at the Alamo Draft House watching Rocky IV on the big screen, and I had an American flag in one of my hands. So. Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
That's one of my favorite films of the franchise. I mean, I love Rocky IV.
Yeah, it's that was the first one I saw, actually.
Really?
Yeah, okay. When I was a kid, I saw it on – I remember seeing it at a friend's house on TV.
The longest MTV music video ever, Rocky IV. Yeah,
that movie is like montage with like scenes punctuating the montage, you know.
It's only like 88 minutes, too.
Yeah, it's really short.
Yeah, I just sat through The Revenant, which is a totally opposite effect.
Like, I think one sequence in The Revenant lasts as long as Rocky.
Oh, yeah. It's stunning how long movies are today compared to what something like Rocky IV could be in the mid-80s. You could put out something under 90 minutes, and it did great.
And felt like it was about 87 minutes too long. I don't like that one. It's just awful.
Well, I love, I don't know, like, you know, it's so funny because I watched the montage in Rocky IV. The montage is like there's the one where it's playing No Easy Way Out and Stallone's driving. And I always get a little like, oh, man. Like you see the montage with like the scenes with Apollo from previous movies. And you kind of go, you know, this movie is totally leaning on the strength of the other films right now, but I don't care.
It makes you want to pop Jackie on your shoulders and run up your street, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a certain type of fan that gets affected by these movies.
Yeah.
Right? If you're not moved by the music, if you're not moved by the macho layering of it, then you're really not going to like these films.
Mm-hmm.
True.
I don't even hate Rocky V like most critics did. I mean, is it the best of the series? Hardly.
No.
But I still liked it. I was very glad that we got Rocky Balboa. A while later and now Creed. And that's one of the things I feel, you know, is kind of strange, right? We went from Rocky V to Rocky Balboa as if Rocky fans couldn't count up to 6.
Right. I know. Yeah. I don't know that. I think when Rocky Balboa came out, there was a sort of aversion to numbers in movies. And there still is. Like it used to be, you'd have a number after the movie. And then eventually they kind of feel ashamed. So they do such a, like, The Avengers : Age of Ultron. You know, now they have the : subtitle. You know,
well, it was just
Batman Returns kind of changed it.
Kids can't read Roman numerals. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, they're not taught it in schools these days, I don't believe.
I don't think they are.
No,
they're not.
Like my students, when I use them, they're like, "What's this?" Why part I? What?
I V L M C. Yeah.
But so the new movie Creed is the one we wanted to have back to talk about. And as we were recording this, Stallone just won a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actor.
Did he? Well deserved.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, well, very well deserved.
I mean, you know, people make fun of Stallone, but, you know, there are times when he can be very affecting. And he was as effective as hell in Creed.
Yeah. Yes, and you know, it's the first Rocky movie. Like I kind of sensed that, like, if Stallone makes another Rocky movie, he's going to move to the trainer position. And I thought it was I didn't expect them to go as far as they did with, like, you know, okay, like Rocky's got, you know, Rocky. Spoiler alert: if you haven't seen Creed, we're going to spoil it. Rocky gets cancer, you know.
Right.
And, yeah.
Like that was pretty rough seeing Stallone, like, with his hair falling out, you know, but he's lying down showing plays and stuff. I thought that was pretty cool. Like studying fights.
It leads to one of the most effective scenes in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll fight if you fight.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I got chills.
Yeah, I kind of got mad for a second because Stallone was just like, "Nah, I'm not gonna," and I was just like, "Why are you doing this, Rocky? Why?"
He got you. Manipulation. They're good at it.
And then he's like, "Oh, if you fight," and I was like, "Yes."
Yeah.
And the movie, I mean, quite frankly, the new Star Wars films, and I'm not going to come in as a hater here, but what they tried to do was go back to the old fashioned effects is what they wanted to do. Creed doesn't make that mistake. In fact, the filming of the fight scenes, especially the first major fight scene with Creed, is absolutely stunning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That whole one take, amazing piece of filmmaking.
Whole fight was one take. I was really blown away by that when I saw that.
And you know, I'm watching Creed. I'm watching the movie. I'm into the movie. But I'm also seeing this amazing piece of filmmaking that impressed me. It was just, I went, whoa.
Yeah.
That was just one take. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, the hits were, you know, you go back and you look at the original Rocky and you can see the head jerks. It's not that way in Creed. It's really sophisticated filmmaking.
Yeah, because one reason we wanted to have you on, Paul, was that you write boxing novels, your fight card series.
Yes.
And have you ever taken up boxing? Has that ever been something you've done? Or are you
not,
just a fan?
Not seriously, no, not at all.
Okay.
I've been a boxing fan for a long time, and quite frankly, the fight card series, the structure for the fight card series is very Rocky-ish. I mean, it's each book, I mean, we're like to 46 titles now, mm-hmm. and the great majority of them are the journey of one fighter to achieve whatever goal it may be that he has. And when I sat down and, you know, talked to whoever's writing the next book, because we've had, you know, 40 plus authors work on this series, I've always told them that, you know, if you write a mystery, it still has to be solved by boxing. Each fight card book has to be resolved in the ring. Doesn't have to be the heavyweight championship of the world. It can be for a bar championship or the love of a girl in Poughkeepsie. Whatever it is, whatever's on the line, though, it has to have that big final Rocky fight.
Mm, yeah, the big event it works towards.
Paul, let me ask you, who are some of your favorite fighters?
I have, in the last few years, come to a real appreciation of Ali.
Okay.
I just think career-wise and the person that he's turned into has made boxing what it is. And I think that Gene Tunney was the guy from the past that I really admired, and because he was an intellectual fighter. And right. You take him against other fighters of his day, and he just really stood out.
Okay.
What did you think, speaking of Muhammad Ali and boxing movies, what did you think of the Michael Mann Ali film with Will Smith in the role?
It was good. I mean, I think Will Smith did a good job. He wasn't Will Smith like he is in most of the films he's in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he really worked hard to capture the spirit of Ali. But again, that movie had more of an agenda than a film like Rocky does.
Okay. What do you mean by agenda? What was its agenda?
I think that it was more about the civil rights movement and mm-hmm. him standing up and not going to the draft and Martin Luther King and
Malcolm X
and all of that stuff, which is a part of Ali's story. Obviously, he's a man with much more depth than a Rocky movie would be, and I think they tried to capture that, but fell a little bit on the liberal side of things.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, because Rocky movies are more – they're just more like because when the first Rocky film came out, and you know, this is very kind of film history 101 nonsense, but you know, like but the – movies in the early 70s were like really, really cynical. Like you always had like the Bonnie and Clyde type ending or, you know, like movies were, you know, often had like really dark endings.
They were extended noir.
Yeah. And, you know, you had like your Taxi Drivers and of course that attitude sort of didn't go away, but when Rocky came out, it seemed to be a really positive film that like made people feel good, and it's like you didn't get a lot of movies that were critically acclaimed that like made you come out of the theater just elated and motivated.
You gotta wonder how many people ran up those steps in Philadelphia.
Civilization at that time, or America at that time, there was a lot of the everyman feeling like they were put upon. Mm-hmm. And Rocky stepped up as the everyman hero, and his goal wasn't to win in Rocky. He comes to an understanding his goal is just to go the distance.
Yes, to go as far as he can.
I think that's what every citizen, every male citizen that struggled in a blue-collar job, they just want to get through the day. They just want to get through the week, right? You just want to go the distance. You don't expect to win, but you want to make a good effort.
Well, and that's the thing too, is in that time, you know, movies were often about, you're getting screwed by the man, you're a victim, you know, and
you can't win.
The system's rigged, you know. Yeah. And here's a movie, Rocky, where the everyman who's, you know, he's not smart, he's kind of a, you know, he's kind of adult, but you know, he gets an opportunity and he takes it and he runs with it. You know, to rise above. You know.
It also had
an
effect on
her. And when given the chance, he makes the right decisions. Right, decisions determine destiny. Yes. And you know, he rises above who he was and becomes who he could be.
Yeah, he's right. Like the leg breaker with the heart of gold. What were you going to say, John?
I think this. A lot of people say this was the first movie. Rocky was the first movie where people were going to see it again and again. Like, it was getting repeat viewers before Star Wars. Like, there was that phenomenon of Star Wars having repeat viewers, but Rocky, people were going back to see it again and again for that kind of high of seeing the little guy win for once, or the underdog, you know, make it through the entire match or the entire fight. So it was probably it's often blamed as one of the movies that ruined movies.
Oh, man. I know. It's one of the movies that they brought back the happy ending, man.
They brought back crowd pleasing and popcorn.
But looking at the Rocky franchise, I mean, the action figures for Rocky alone, I mean, we're talking 40, 50 action figures that were put out, including a side of beef that are still, you know, highly sought after today. When you've got that much commercialism going on for a film series, you know, there's really something that's hooked in with people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing that was so remarkable about the first Rocky movie was that, you know, the Rocky movies are kind of autobiographical. They follow the arc of Stallone's life a little bit. And, you know, with Rocky, it sort of mirrored Stallone's own tenacity with writing the movie. You know, they say he wrote it in 3 days. He goes, listen, I wrote the first draft in 3 days. You know, that wasn't any good.
Yeah.
But
but then his stance, he's a penniless guy making softcore porn movies as the Italian Stallion.
Stuart and they offer him this party. Kitty and stuff.
In essence, is a huge amount of money for somebody like that. And he says, no, not unless I can star.
Yeah, because they wanted, like, James Caan or or like Burt Reynolds to star in it. You know, they didn't want Stallone. They were like, oh, we'll give you a bunch of money if you just walk away. He's like, nope, I got to do it. It's my movie.
Well, there you go. Look, there you go. Spider Rico action figure from 1976.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
If you played the Rocky video game for PS2, you could play as Spider Rico.
Yeah, I had a little tug at the heartstring when I saw Spider Rico in Rocky Balboa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there were Rocky championship belts that were put out. You know, Rock'em Sock'em Robots with Rocky and Clubber Lang.
Yep, I remember those.
Hey, come over here if you want a real man.
Well, you know, they kind of invented the training scene in movies.
The training montage, really, you know?
Yeah, because after Rocky, I mean, you didn't see that in Kung Fu films until after Rocky, because Rocky was a huge hit in Hong Kong, so they would have the Kung Fu movies where they were training with their techniques and stuff, and they would have montage sequences.
Did 36 Chamber of Shaolin come before or after Rocky?
After.
After. Yeah. I was going to say, because that movie felt very Rocky-inspired.
Yeah, very much.
It was kind of trying to show how the great Kung Fu master is created, the great Kung Fu fighter is created. Because before that, you just accepted they had this ability and somebody was better than the other one.
And I think with Rocky, there was so much that had to come together. Would Rocky be Rocky without the Bill Conti theme?
Oh, man.
No, not at all.
Oh, gosh.
Without the Philadelphia Steps. You know. If Rocky had you know, been representing Los Angeles, nobody would have cared. But because he's in Philly, you know, I mean, it gave a whole different feel to it.
Wouldn't have been Rocky without Burgess Meredith either.
Paul, he could have run up the Santa Monica steps. What about the Santa Monica steps?
Yeah, Santa Monica steps. Yeah, like really? Yeah. California incline. But here in Creed, they make you anticipate the theme.
Mm-hmm.
They give you some hip hop, they give you some rap, they give you a couple of trumpet tweets, and it's not quite there. And when it finally hits, when you finally get that theme, the theater erupts because people are there to see Rocky and hear the Rocky theme.
Yeah.
And you know, I think it was a very, very smart move with this movie.
Here you go. Look, it's a side of beef action figure as well. Okay.
I told you.
Jeez. I wasn't even aware of that.
But you get Southpaw come out earlier this year. Did anybody care?
No.
Nobody cared.
I haven't seen it.
Because it was a complete downer of a movie. I didn't go see it. I love boxing films. I've seen, you know, just about every boxing film that's out there, and I'm looking at the trailers for Southpaw, and I'm just going, I don't care.
Yeah. You know what, like the last fighting movie, I won't say boxing because it's not really a boxing movie, but the last fighting movie that gave me sort of that pump that Rocky gave me was Warrior with Joel Edgerton and Tom Hardy. I thought that had a very, like, it's a movie where you leave like feeling uplifted, like you have that feel. It was really going for that feel.
And there's some such character complexities in Warrior as there is in Rocky. The relationships between the characters. I mean, the relationship between Rocky and Apollo Creed is kind of amazing, the arc that it goes through.
Yeah.
Well, from hatred to respect to, you know, best friends sort of thing. And now you bring back Apollo Creed's estranged son.
Yeah.
And to tie that knot up again, I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing, this is something I wanted to bring up, was earlier I said that we agreed that the Rocky movies sort of have an arc with Stallone's life. You know, it has him getting his shot. It has him sort of on top, like, you know, him making his, you know, Rambo movies, his movies fighting communists. He does Rocky IV. But one thing that happened between Rocky Balboa and Creed was that Stallone's son died.
Mm-hmm.
Sage Stallone.
Yes, in real life.
In real life.
I knew him, man. He was a good kid. He was just misunderstood, man.
His brother, Frank Stallone, was on Carolla's show, and he said that the kid just didn't – he took horrible care of himself. Like, you know, smoked a lot, you know, drank nothing but sodas and
– hung out with David Austin, yeah.
Oh, well, that means probably more was going on. Yeah. You know, it really, I thought the movie, like, Rocky, he's not around. I was kind of wondering if the film was going to address that, but it did kind of hint that Rocky Jr. is no longer in Rocky's life at all in the film.
Well, that was my only beef with continuity in the film was Rocky's going through chemo and nobody's there.
Yeah.
But Creed. And as if you couldn't even get patches from the last movie to show up.
Well, you know, Polly's dead. You know, Adrian's dead. His son, they do make a mention that he's at school somewhere, and it's clear that they're estranged.
Yeah, they just don't speak anymore.
So I didn't really have a problem with that, and it also led to Rocky's initial decision just to accept this. I'm ready to go. There is nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hated seeing my wife go through it.
So. Yeah. She didn't make it.
So, you know, I think it really, you know, this is the cliche. Rocky movies have heart. They really do. Mm-hmm. And for those of us that tap into it, for those of us that works for, as cynical as we may be, something about Rocky touches something inside of us, and we want to cheer.
And even with, like, lesser movies like Rocky V, okay, there it even has those moments where you go, yeah, like when Rocky goes, this is the best line, one of the best lines in any Rocky movie. My rig's outside.
Yeah.
Tommy Gunn only fights in the ring.
It's such
a cheesy movie, but I love it.
If you look at Rocky V, I mean, he's already in the trainer position.
Yeah, he is. He's training Tommy
Gunn.
But
it goes south on him. Mm-hmm. It goes south. So what does Rocky have to do? He has to fix his mistake. How does he fix his mistake? It's Fifth City time.
Beats him up in the street.
Well, when Rocky Balboa, they were going for the George Foreman version of boxing.
Oh, yeah.
Where he comes back out of the ring in his late 40s or I forget how old he was when he made his comeback, but it was like he was like late 40s or something.
Yeah.
But then we have the un-Rocky film, the Rocky 6.5, which is where he and is it Robert De Niro face off in the ring together?
Oh, grudge match.
Grudge match.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's Rocky 6.5.
It did feel like a rejected script for, like, one of the Rocky franchises that MGM said no to, and Stallone just rewrote it for Millennium and crossed the names out, because, oh.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it was like. I mean, this, to me, was his initial idea for what should have been the Creed movie, and it just goes south on him, and they put this, you know. I went to see it because I'm a Rocky fan, right? And I wanted to see it, but it was really, quite frankly, not a very good film. But then I think, you know, with the new director, the new writers, they brought to Creed something that Rocky couldn't bring to Grudge Match.
Yeah, this was not written at all by – this is the first Rocky movie that Stallone – he just produced it. He didn't write it or anything. He just has a character's credit. And it was Ryan Coogler who did Fruitvale Station. Which I never saw, and I think he's rumored to be doing a Black Panther for Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
that's the last headline, of course.
Yeah. but it's
Coogler brought his star from Fruitvale Station with him as well.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah,
and he was perfectly cast in this, just the right amount of animosity and just the right amount of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And the athleticism to do that one-take boxing.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, gosh.
Was, you know, I can't think of any actors offhand that could have handled that.
And you also had, you know, like the last few Rocky movies, you know, in Rocky V, we had Tommy Morrison as Tommy Gunn. Weird casting a real bot. Like, and didn't he like get AIDS and die or something?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
And and then you had who played the boxer in Rocky Balboa?
It wasn't Bernard Hopkins, was it? It was somebody.
I'll look it up. But
it was an actual pro boxer. In fact, I've noticed with the last few films they seem to have tied in with HBO Sports.
Yes.
Because you see their announcers, and apparently they're filming these big climactic fight scenes or these bouts at actual HBO cards before they go to broadcast.
Well, and they even
so
like
they have the crowd and the atmosphere and everything.
And Rocky Balboa.
Yeah, Antonio Tarver was the boxer that he faces off with.
Oh, that's right. Yes, Antonio Tarver.
Yes.
And this movie, we had Tony Bellew, who's a British light heavyweight boxer.
Right.
As pretty Ricky Conlan.
What I liked was they didn't make his boxing character evil or anything. Like
no, in fact, he has very good motivation.
Right.
Like, his motivation is great.
I've got to make money because I'm going to jail.
Because I'm going to jail and I need to take care of my family.
But here's the amazing thing about that. You look at the final fight in Creed and you look at Michael B. Jordan and he is ripped from one end of his body to the other.
Oh, I know where
you're
going.
You look at the other guy and he looks fat.
Yeah, he looks like he has dad bod.
And yet he is, in real life, a champion.
Yeah.
Because there's different types of muscles that are used in the real world of boxing, especially when you're a heavyweight.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like Michael B. Jordan to me looked movie, like he looked like movie in shape. Like he looks
movie good. Boxer.
He looks good on camera, you know, like Stallone did in, you know, Rocky IV. But you know, you look at Tony Bellew and he's kind of got dad bod going on, you know. It's very his body's very undefined. But this guy is a real life fighter. It kind of you kind of get the gap there between movies and reality.
Well, because boxing is all speed, technique, and endurance.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with having big muscles or how much you deadlift.
Well, that's what I remember hearing Adam Carolla talking about Ali versus Foreman, and they were like, you know, George Foreman was a giant, scary dude. And they were like, oh, he's going to make, you know, paste out of Ali. But Carolla was saying, but you have to go with the athlete. It's not about the big muscles and the big build. It's about the athletics of the fighter.
Yeah.
And that's why Ali won.
Mm-hmm. Because it's not about the muscles. And then you take a guy like Tyson, and it's about the power of the fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, he's, you know, again, he wasn't a bodybuilder. He just had massive power in the punch.
Mm-hmm.
But he tended to get winded after, the fourth round. That's when they were – the guys who knocked him out took him out after, the fourth round.
That's
he didn't
like,
have a lot of endurance.
Yeah, they just hit the boogeyman folks and knocked him out in the eighth or ninth, I think it was. Because he was tired by then, Tyson. He was knackered.
He wasn't
and
built
and that
for
was
that.
Basically how his career ended because everybody went, okay, we just got to get past the fourth round.
Now he does Mike Tyson Mysteries on Cartoon Network.
He does like spoken word, like Henry Rollins.
Yeah,
oh, God, the one person on the earth you can't understand, he's doing spoken word.
Get up but, and my pigeons in the morning.
Wait, it reminds me, it's like my favorite boxer was Marvin Hagler, and he never picked up weights.
Yep.
He never lifted weights.
Marvin Hagler, Marvelous Marvin, was the best, my favorite as well growing up.
Love that guy, because he was like the big boxer when I was a kid. So I remember going to see the fights at Close Circuit TV. You would go down to the city auditorium and watch the fights on a live broadcast on a giant video screen.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have pay-per-view at that time.
Yeah.
And with him, it was when we were really changing away from the interest in the heavyweights.
Yes.
Because before that, the lower weights, nobody cared about. But then the heavyweights become a lumbering, you know, mass, and guys like Marvin Hagler were fighting in the ring. And so all of a sudden your cruiserweights, your middleweights became the focus of where boxing was going.
Yes, definitely.
And Roberto Duran.
And then you have a film like the Clint Eastwood film based on Rope Burns by FX O'Toole.
Oh, yeah, Million Dollar Baby. Yeah.
Million Dollar Baby. And again, was that a film about boxing? Or was that a film about human beings?
It wasn't about boxing at all. In fact, a lot of people were very angry when they saw the movie and they found out it was about euthanasia or not. Well, but it had this third act that was all about euthanasia. And so a lot of people like I remember there was a controversy because John's favorite film critic, Michael Medved, spoiled it. he said, warning everybody, this is not a boxing movie. It's a movie about euthanasia and blah blah blah, and you know, if that bothers you, you shouldn't go see it. And I remember Roger Ebert wrote this piece about how you should never, ever spoil a movie and how unprofessional and stuff. But Roger Ebert would do that all the time to movies he hates.
All the time.
So hypocritical for Ebert. But I just remember like people like losing their minds because Michael Medved spoiled it in his review.
Well, you know, Roger Ebert never met a family movie he didn't hate.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Anything that was rated PG-13, he would, you know, shat all over.
Yeah.
But if it was R and had a cynical ending, you know, then it was a masterpiece.
And, yes. Unless it was like a violent horror movie, then he was like Harlan Ellison, where he'd go like, people in the movie were masturbating.
What? Yeah. At the decapitations.
Yeah, like I remember Harlan Ellison claimed there was a couple like masturbating to the decapitation in The Omen.
It was like the Roman Colosseum.
Yeah. But no, I remember like, because occasionally if it was like a horror movie, like I Spit on Your Grave or something, Roger Ebert would go like, 0 stars. This is filth pornography.
Yet he wrote Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
Exactly.
And he wrote some of the more violent Russ Meyer movies afterwards under another name. Which were just as vile and mean as anything in Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
It's a paycheck, guys.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, Ebert, I mean, I don't take away from him his brilliance as a film critic. I mean, the man knew film and he could write about it. I just didn't agree with him a whole lot.
Yeah.
I'm not the biggest fan of his just because, I don't know, I just never liked his worldview very much, but
I never liked his writing. To me, it was just like fanzine writing.
I'm more of a but here's the thing though. Pauline Kael, I agree with about a small fraction of what she writes, but she is a very entertaining writer.
She could actually write, so you couldn't take that away from her. Yeah. Same thing with John Simon and some of the others.
She could write circles around any film critic today.
Yes.
Well, but see, I liked Roger Ebert because I knew if he hated a film, I could go to it and I knew I would enjoy it.
Yes.
That was my barometer. If Roger Ebert hated it, then I was going to have a good time.
So it's basically editor page effect. Like if you disagreed what the editorial was, then, you know, it was a good editorial. So that's how it was with Roger Ebert. It's like, you know, bad review was like a green light. His Dog of the Week was always like a kung fu film. And when I was a kid, it's like I always wanted to see the Dog of the Week.
Was Ebert the one who did the Dog of the Week, or was that Medved?
They started with Dog of the Week on sneak previews. They went to At the Movies and did Stinker of the Week, I think with a skunk. Mm-hmm. And then they had their own show, and I don't even know if they did the Dog of the Week thing gimmick anymore. they didn't own the gimmick. Like, PBS owned Dog of the Week, like in 77 or something.
The Dog of the Week is Ninja 3, The Domination.
Yeah, it's like...
That movie rules!
It's ninjas on a golf course.
Yeah! Blowing everything up. It's amazing.
So the other thing about that I think Stu and I had discussed on the bodybuilding episode is I had said that Stallone was actually the one who started the workout craze. It wasn't Schwarzenegger.
No,
I agree.
And it was because of the montage scenes in Rocky that showed him lifting weights. And you just didn't see that in films. And you didn't even – Schwarzenegger wasn't a big star back then. So it was like that's what kind of sold the whole health club thing was looking
at Stallone. And I mean Schwarzenegger, the conceit was – he got that way by doing nothing. I mean, at least with Stallone, you saw that he was working.
Yes.
Right.
And that there has to be some effort.
Showing work in a movie, like showing progress. And, you know, like I mean, how many people like – because I think John and I talked about this when we did the – or maybe I don't know. Maybe it was John and Stu talked about this. I don't remember. But – it was that the gym craze, people going into the gym, didn't happen because of, you know, Schwarzenegger and pumping iron. It happened because
it was Rocky III. It was Rocky III.
Yeah, it was people seeing that in the movie. They went, oh, my gosh, I'm going to drink raw eggs. And
Rambo. The way he looked at Rambo, he was, like, super defined. He looked like a steak or something.
Oh, he looked like an action figure.
We all wanted to look like that. It's like, yeah, man, we're all going to get veiny and ripped.
Like a McFarlane
action figure. He's also responsible for the human growth hormone trip that we're on now, right?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I saw this onion story. It was Peyton Manning's 14-foot wife crushes head of reporter who asks about HGH.
Well, you know, I have to give Stallone credit. He does look pretty sharp for his age if he's doing HGH. He is, as Joe Rogan said, he's the canary in the coal mine for that drug.
Yes.
You know, if he drops dead tomorrow, then we know, okay, maybe we shouldn't go in that direction.
Yeah.
If he makes it to 100, it's kind of a good endorsement for it.
But, well, okay, let's get back to Creed. What about the chicken scene? Right?
This is how...
And one of the best lines of the movie is when Stallone goes, "Man, chickens must be slower today." I just loved it. I just burst out laughing because it was just perfect. You're revisiting probably, you know, an iconic scene from the first movie. It's almost shot in exactly the same way in exactly the same place.
Oh, yeah.
And... You know, it, but it has a resonance that is particular to Creed.
Yes.
You know, that is a different fighter. It's a different time. It's a different place.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And as one who owns chickens, I guess I should try that just to see how tough it actually is.
You really own chickens, do you?
Yeah, I got three. I got three hens.
Jesus.
One of my good buddies, he has chickens out, or he had chickens at his old place, and I remember when they got out and helping him corral them, and yeah, some of them can be pretty fast.
Yes. Oh, man. You have to get a chicken catcher. It looks like a coat hanger, and you kind of grab them by the feet.
Yeah.
So,
but I remember he had his chicken coop outside, and one day a bobcat made its way in, and he said... There were chicken parts all over the neighborhood. Like, there were, like, in people's lawns, just, like, chicken parts ripped to shreds, like, all over the neighborhood. He was going...
I've chased off raccoons. I've chased off hawks.
Foxes?
Foxes. Mm. It's pretty frightening.
And then he got, like, a super... Like, he got more chickens and got, like, a much better container. And you
supposedly
could...
that came... You have to get a tight lock. You have to get something secure. This is the interesting.
You have to be able to keep Stallone out from stealing your chickens.
Yeah,
exactly. Supposedly, a lot of that training stuff comes from Sly's brother Frank, who is apparently a walking encyclopedia of boxing history. And I've always said I'd rather hang out with Frank than Sly any day just to talk to him about boxing.
Well, and Frank, his appearances on Corolla are hilarious. He's really funny. And he does his impressions of his brother. anyway, sorry, Paul, yes. I talked to you.
No, it's, you know, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I actually quite like Frank Stallone.
Yeah.
He plays out here at a jazz club in L.A. called Vibrato, which is owned by Herb Albert, at least every other month.
Does he play Take You Back?
He's really quite good.
Does he play Take You Back?
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah.
Does he play...
I guess Frank Stallone.
Peace Now Time, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Peace Now Life? No, he doesn't.
My favorite Frank Stallone role is the bartender in Barfly.
He's only like in it like two times.
Out of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't there like a Street Singer Rocky action figure too? Like, and it was a Frank Stallone action figure.
Yes, there was a Frank Stallone action figure.
Oh my God.
Absolutely.
Wow. There was even.
I just want to make sure I didn't make that.
There was even a burning drum action figure.
I had no idea.
It was less popular than the side of beef.
Yeah, you actually cooked the beef on the side of drum. Yeah, on the heated drum. Yeah.
Okay, you can have Frank Stallone or the side of beef. I'll take the side of beef. Thank you very much.
Yeah. A Mickey figure would be pretty cool.
Yeah. You're just like hunched over, pointed at Rocky and screaming. That'd be good.
Yeah. With a Q-tip in the
with an umbrella and a beak on his face.
Exactly.
That's wrong genre. Yeah,
that's
you're a bum!
Penguin.
I loved his penguin. I really think the penguin role got him the Mickey role.
You don't think it was the 25 years before that he actually of experience he had that got him the role in Rocky? From a Mice and Men? You don't think it was his body of work for nearly 30-something years or over 30 years?
It was his Twilight Zone where he woke up in the world where nobody and he had all these books.
You know? Oh, that was the best.
My glasses! No!
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, tremendous actor.
So back to Creed. What did you guys think of the romance angle with the girl with hearing loss?
I haven't even said if I liked the film or not yet.
I know.
Yeah, did you hate it still? Or love it?
Sorry.
All right. Craig Cohen, our friend over at the Slycast, you should be checking out, especially the Rocky ones, because they are just in-depth as all crazy hell. Said, if you hated Creed, we can't be friends anymore. That's what he told me today. I said I was going to quote him on that while we record, just before I give my verdict. So my verdict is, I thought it was very good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah. So Craig, we're still friends.
You asked
sorry
about
that.
The romance aspect. I think it was, quite frankly, tagged on because they were trying to capture the whole Adrian thing again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
And one of the things I told the guys in the Fight Card series was the fact that we could not have any girlfriends or wives who wanted their husband fighter to quit the game. I'm so irritated and aggravated by that type of character. You know, stop being a roadblock in this guy's way. And so, you know, anybody turned in a book with that kind of character, and I immediately edited it out. So it wasn't that bad in this movie, but it didn't have the impact that Adrian did.
The Rocky movie that was most guilty of that was Rocky IV, where Adrian's like, you can't win.
Yeah.
But even in this movie,
even in this movie, Adrian's creating an issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It's true.
So
there was a few problems I had with this film, though, I've got to admit.
You know, actually, it's not Adrian. It's Patricia Rashid as Apollo's wife.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it was good to see her undrugged as well. Bill Cosby, wasn't he? Oh,
ouch.
When I was listening to Gavin McInnes' show, and he said when he started watching the movie and, you know, she goes to pick him up, he's like, this woman abandoned her son? And like, he was, I hate you. You are such an awful. Oh, it's his illegitimate son. Oh, well, she's kind of awesome. Oh.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. He's just kind of awesome.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, that was actually interesting because it spoke to what athletes do when they're at that level.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, true. You know, when it's all there for them, they take advantage of it, you know? And so he has an illegitimate son. Are we surprised? Not really.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where it's like, we never see Apollo doing anything like that in those movies, but when it's presented, you go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You expect it.
There was no issue with suspension of disbelief there. Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'd be more, if Rocky had an illegitimate son, then I would be like, wait, what?
Yeah. Right, because Rocky's supposed to be the true blue.
Yeah, he's
right?
The all-American. He's the guy that, like, he's the guy you're supposed to try to be like. You know, he's the good guy.
Yeah,
he's also never really much of a womanizer.
No,
like, he's kind of like this slow, you know, shy guy around.
He goes after Adrian and Rocky, and everybody's like, "Hey, she's retarded. You're dating the retard girl."
I gotta say this: I fucking hated the soundtrack in this movie, though. I hated it.
Is it the hip hop angle to it?
It was just is like modernizing Rocky, and it's like it just didn't. I mean, first off, I mean the reason why this girl has got the progressive hearing loss. What's the point? What was the point?
It was a forced soundtrack.
Yeah, I didn't either.
No, it was like I mean I don't like the Rocky IV soundtrack. I think it's ridiculous. But I mean, and five, but I mean, at least the songs have got some sort of, you know, hook to some of them. But I mean, this one was just, I could never, I mean, I've got all the Rocky soundtracks, but I ain't getting this one. This one's just crap.
But be honest, when Michael B. Jordan's running and those people pop those wheelies in slow motion.
I thought I was watching 9-9 the Bronx Warriors for a minute.
I thought that was rad.
I thought it was garbage. Oh, yeah. It was stupid.
I mean, for me, I'm watching that and I'm going, okay, I understand that they are copying the running up the stairs montage. I don't care. This is cool.
Yeah, I was just like, this is so cool. I mean, it's like everything. It's like, how can we make this more masculine? Bikes doing wheelies.
It was just
Philly
stupid.
I'm unashamed to admit, man, I teared up a couple of times in Creed.
I did too.
I mean, it affected me, and I don't get that affected in films. Certainly nothing like Star Wars moves me that way.
Rocky is the only movie that makes me tear up every time I see it. When I know I can pin it down to the exact moment, I go, this is it. This is where it's, you know, water's going to come a little bit. It's when Rocky, when Adrian runs up to Rocky and he goes, where's your hat? That part, I just go like,
Puffed up. Swear to God, you fucking puffed up.
I cried when Polly didn't keep his robot in Rocky.
I know. Where's the robot go?
Talk about the robot.
Why is the robot not in Polly's empty apartment?
I know. With like the Four Roses bourbon in its hands. That would have been awesome.
Happy birthday, Polly.
You know, every Rocky film, Rocky has to lead with his face.
Yes.
I mean, you know he's going to get the crap beat out of him, and you are waiting for the second when he gets up off the canvas.
Yes.
And when that happens and the music soars, I'm even choking up now thinking about it.
Oh, I gotta bring up one point I hated in Creed. And while I liked it, now that we're talking about the getting up off the floor, it was when Creed gets knocked out and there's all that flashbacks he's having. And all of a sudden he sees Apollo Creed and he gets up like Hulk Hogan. It was like, this is stupid. Nobody gets up off the canvas like that straight away. Nobody. Never seen it.
You know, I know it's probably unrealistic. I loved that moment. When I saw Apollo, I was like, yes.
Yeah. Sorry, Stu. I thought it was great.
I thought it was awesome. I got so like, I was like, no. And then when you see Apollo, that archival footage of Apollo there, I was just like,
I do agree with you, Stu. It was stupid. I absolutely agree with you. I loved it.
Yes.
Yeah. The thing about this series is we just love being manipulated by images we know are stupid.
Yes.
Yes.
Which is
absolutely.
We don't care.
We don't care, right? Yeah. I mean, it's Rocky. I'm there.
Yeah, but so it's already got in the past straight away. See, I went in with this with zero expectations, all right? I like the Rocky movies, don't get me wrong, for the most part, most of them. But I walked in with this with no expectations. I was like, I don't know how bad this is going to be. But I went in with a flat line, like, okay, it's only going to go one way or the other. But like I said, I really enjoyed it for the most part. There were some dumb bits. What happened to Pauly? I mean, why is Pauly dead all of a sudden?
I think the reason Pauly was dead was to make, like we talked about earlier with the cancer subplot, was to make it more dramatic, like he's the only one that's left there.
He had to be isolated.
Like it had to making isolating Rocky was sort of part of what made it dramatic. So
I thought
like,
it would
have
been better actually having.
I thought it would have been better
having Pauly there for the fact that he's. How Pauly and Rocky didn't even like each other for years in the first couple of movies, and you know they've lost Adrian between them, and all of a sudden Rocky's now got this cancer, and it would have given some meat to Pauly's character, you know, about don't you die on me now, you know, I've already lost my sister, but you know, I thought it was just, you know, it's convenient. Oh, Pauly's dead, you know.
In scriptural rights, you know, I mean, that's not a bad idea, but you know, I time and effort, and this was not supposed to be Rocky's movie. This was really supposed to be Michael B. Jordan's character's movie. Because if this franchise is going to go forward, it's going to go forward on the shoulders of Michael B.
Jordan. It won't last without Sylvester Stallone. I'm sorry. So the moment Stallone dies in whatever sequel they deem it, because it's got to happen. You know, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
This series will just drop. It was like, Sly ain't there. You know? I don't want nothing to do with it. Even if he's behind the camera and he's got all his, you know, fingers in the pie on the project, people won't care. They want to see Rocky on there, on the screen.
I know they're talking about doing more movies, and I'm sure Stallone's going
to
be involved.
They need to do one more. One more, and that's it. Be done with it.
Yeah, I agree.
As long as they're good, I'm you know.
Yeah.
And the writing in this was fairly sharp.
Yeah, it was. You
know, it was very good. No, it was very, very good.
It moved along. It had all the right moments and gave us what we wanted in a way that was unapologetic.
Yeah.
I did like the scene of Rocky at the grave, so I thought that was great. Probably one of the best ones in the film. I'd probably say the best one in the film. Yeah.
I love those. He put Four Roses Bourbon by Polly's Grave.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just wow.
Before World War II, I found out that was the number one selling bourbon before Jack Daniels.
Really?
But like after World War II, for whatever reason, Jack Daniels became the top selling bourbon.
So if Jack Daniels never happened, that would be what Lemmy was drinking, right?
Yes. Lemmy would still be alive, actually.
Yeah, Lemmy would still be alive. one thing that I thought was kind of interesting about, talking about Adonis Creed's son,
Donnie Johnson. I was like, really pissed my pants when I heard that. I'm like, really?
Donnie Johnson. I thought it was kind of interesting how they made him. Because, like, remember in Rocky is, he's kind of a loser. He's doing these little fights. He's working for this sleazy gangster played by Joe Spinell.
Yeah.
And in this movie, however, Adonis is not a guy who is desperate. In fact, he's got a good career. He's on his way. He could just go through his life and be fine.
Yep.
But he's driven by something to fight. He's going.
And he has to deal with the specter of his father.
Yeah, it's
haunting him.
I thought it was an interesting twist on that they didn't go again with the, I've got to fight because even Rocky tells him, fighters do that because they have nothing else to do, because they don't have any other option,
He's
in a white collar job, he's got an education, mm-hmm. but he's got to fight.
Yeah, he just has to. It's something he has to do. He has to prove himself.
Yes. Well, they also made it clear his big problem was his temper, because he just flares up at nothing at the drop of a hat,
mm-hmm.
Or anything. Like when he's called Baby Creed, and
he beats up that rapper.
Yeah. Yeah, really, that's what set him off. It's like, nah.
It seems like training with Rocky would pull him off.
Boxing trunks come out.
Yeah.
Before the final fight, I mean, what a cool touch was that.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
To show that he's finally coming to terms with his heritage.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And it was Patricia Steed's character coming around to supporting him.
Looks like they washed the trunks as well. Washed all the blood off the trunks.
Yeah.
I thought he was buried in these. We got an excavation order and I dug them up for you.
Yeah, really.
If James Brown was still alive to be in this movie, though.
Although Carl Weathers is away. Carl Weathers is a much bigger guy than Michael B. Jordan.
Oh, much, yeah.
Guy played for the Raiders, like back when in the Kenny Stabler days. He was huge.
I love Carl. I love
But he was short, too. I mean, that's why he was mashed up against Rocky, because Rocky's no giant.
No, right? In fact, it's almost comical watching Rocky IV, because Dolph Lundgren just towers up.
Yeah.
I think that was part of the point of that film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Was to put Lundgren in there at 6'4" over Rocky's, 5'7"?
Yeah.
And that was what heightened the odds. I mean, even Bridget Nielsen was bigger than he was.
Oh, taller than he was. Nielsen. Jesus. I remember watching her, but I dated this girl who watched, the Flavor of Love stuff, and God almighty, she's a creep.
Oh, Strange Love. I've got that series. That's good. That's good. Yeah. I enjoy that.
Strange
Love. I like that one. Yeah.
I remember seeing, a picture of her on stage with Public Enemy, and the caption said, not shown, Chuck D's career flashing before his eyes.
Yeah, she was completely hammered throughout that whole series. She was gone. Yeah. Oh, she'd have to be.
I think she was taking some of Stallone's HGH. I don't know.
Probably. Yeah.
She looks like, I don't know, you look at her in Rocky IV and Beverly Hills Cop 2, and you look at her now and she looks significantly more masculine. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
She probably got a dick.
Definitely.
Well, and didn't one of Stallone's exes, Stuart, didn't one of Stallone's exes claim that he gave her HGH or something?
I thought it was Brigitte.
Maybe it was.
He at least tried to give her, steroids. The rumor was he was doing anabolics in the 80s. I don't know for sure, but oh, you know, he had
Rainbow Three. I don't know for sure. I can't be sure on that one.
Okay.
Now we don't want to go around.
Other than his lats being 6 feet wide, I don't want to imply anything. You know?
Yeah. So let's protect the podcast here.
Yeah.
You know, so that's gone years ago. Don't worry about it.
God knows we could be sued for a lot of things we say. So you know, it's we'll have the first lawsuit. But yeah, I mean, I think it was Brigitte who said he encouraged her to take roids.
Wow.
Interesting. Okay. Anyway, but I think for me, both Rocky Balboa and Creed are perfect bookends for the series.
Let me ask you guys,
bring the story full circle.
Just quick, around the table, who prefers Rocky Balboa or Creed? Which one?
I'm going to say Creed.
Okay. John?
I'm going to say Creed.
Okay.
Because it's a better made film.
Okay. John?
I like Rocky Balboa because it's shorter and tighter.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I like Creed. It's nothing against Creed. It's just Rocky Balboa was great fun and a real surprise for me because I didn't like Rocky V.
No, I prefer Rocky Balboa as well. I like Creed a lot. I'll be buying it when it comes out. Oh, I'll wait till the price drops, but I'll definitely be picking it up. I'm paying $30 for it straight away. Screw that. But yeah, I prefer Rocky Balboa as a film. Did anybody get the feeling when they watched this that this felt trimmed? Like there's more to it? Like it's going to be like another 10, 15 minutes to it? I did.
In fact, I thought it felt like it was like, because when I saw the running time, I went, oh, that kind of made me put off seeing it a little bit. And but when I saw it, I didn't feel the running time at all. I thought it felt pretty squared away. I don't know. I didn't feel like anything was missing.
But I think it was a smart move to keep it at the length it was. Yeah, could there have been a little bit more? Could there have been another 5 minutes to kind of touch on some other things? But I think it just kept rolling along, and for me, it worked.
Yeah.
I can't really say anything against it, really. I mean, the timing, it felt about right, especially compared to some of the bloat you get in other movies today.
Oh, I know, like The Revenant.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
That'll be my base point for every bloated film.
So. I was ready for that movie to be over. Like I was sitting there going, like, please just somebody, Tom Hardy or DiCaprio, just show up and shoot one in the head and just roll credits, please.
Yeah.
You know?
So I mean, for me, there's been some pretty decent movies this year outside of Creed, which is definitely my favorite movie. But I did see Spotlight the other night, that was an amazingly tight, well-written movie. I even liked Joy, which I thought was particularly well-acted.
You know, I thought Joy was really good, but the ending was awful, I thought. The way it ended, it just felt so rushed. Like, because I really liked, you know, it took a little bit to get started, but I really liked the agony and the ecstasy of Jennifer Lawrence's character trying to put out a product. Like, it sounds something that sounds so simple, but the hustle and all that stuff. But the ending with the stuff in Texas and with the flash forward to the future and
it was a different film.
It felt like something from a completely different movie, and I left the theater like on a sour note.
The first 10 minutes of Joy, the writing the first 10 minutes of the film where they established that she is the eye and the hurricane of all this dysfunction in her family, and each one of the characters is fully drawn within that 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really, really well done.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, it establishes a lot. And the mother in bed with her soap operas and all that. And I loved Bradley Cooper as the QVC guy. I thought that the QVC element, I thought that was my favorite part of the film.
When they're going through and he's showing her through QVC, yeah I know that was an information dump, but I was fascinated by it.
No, it was the best info dump. It was a great info dump.
Was Murray Osman there?
Joan Rivers was.
Yeah, Joan Rivers was there.
Okay.
Betrayed by her daughter.
Yep.
Oh, God.
And I saw that one with my sister over the holiday. But I think Creed's probably, my second favorite movie of last year.
So what did you pick as your first?
Stuart's favorite movie, Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, God.
Okay.
That was – I saw it three times in the theater. You know, that's the mark of a movie. And I was – you know, loved it each time. You know, I saw.
I don't know if I can come on this show again.
You didn't like
it? I'm sorry. I didn't like it.
Oh, good
man.
What?
Good man. God bless you.
Yeah.
No, I've encountered that a lot. Crap. I know. You know, people are very divided on that film. They, you know, seem to either, you know, get high off of it like I do, or they just don't.
You know, if you got high off of that film just watching it, you'd have a ball driving around Melbourne, basically the streets.
But
that's a country weekend in Melbourne, isn't it?
Really? Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
But no, I saw it three times in the theater. I was just totally and I loved it each time, and I just thought it was so wild and crazy and inventive. And
that guy with that fucking guitar and the flames point, it's like, this
is the best. Oh, I love it.
Stupidest piece of shit I've ever seen. Really.
I bought the soundtrack on vinyl.
Yeah, I know you did.
you probably bought the
SpongeBob SquarePants soundtrack on vinyl as well.
I don't have that, but you know, the day is young.
Well, when it comes to Fury Road, different strokes for different folks, and I do mean different strokes.
Yeah,
but I saw Star Wars.
Talk about in the movies doing things.
I saw the new Star Wars twice. The second time because a friend wanted to see it, and I was like, "Yeah, I'll see it again." The second time I saw it, I was like, "Okay, you know."
Is it any good? I mean, I don't plan to ever watch it.
So it's okay.
You know, it's a fun movie, but it's nothing special.
I mean, we won't be covering on the show. We've announced before, but we'll just give a brief, you know, thumbs up down.
John, Paul, and I were talking before we started recording, and we all agreed that it's okay, but yeah. it's basically and we're not the only people who feel this way. A lot of people do that. It's kind of just a rehash of elements from other Star Wars movies, like. You know, fans are very conservative. They don't like new things, and it's a movie that doesn't do anything new. It doesn't take any risks, and the other Star Wars movies, for better or for worse, were all the products of one guy, George Lucas. You know, he gathered together all these artists, but at the end of the day, they were his movies. This is a focus-tested, you know, product. Put out by a corporation that is designed to please as many people as possible.
Does it feel like a Disney film?
No.
Doesn't feel like a Disney film.
It's pablum. It's oatmeal gray. I mean, I was astounded at the end of the movie. You have built a Death Star that's 12 times the size of the original Death Star, and you have the exact same weakness.
Yeah, it has this one area
for the rebels to blow up.
Like Oscar Isaac could just go in and blow it up, you know.
What movie am I watching here? Is this Episode 4 or is this the new movie? I'm confused.
See, you know, I would have watched that Star Wars film if that had like Bruce Lee in it, and he just went up to the Death Star and like gave it a 1-inch punch and it exploded.
Well, it does have the entire cast of the raid in one scene, but they don't do any fighting.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. So are we all waiting for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon 2?
No.
Not really. I'm not expecting that to be any good. So, you know. It was filmed in English. Hitman 3 might be fun on a so bad it's good level. I don't expect it to be a good movie. Yeah. I'm real big on Shane Black's next movie that I saw the trailer for before
The
Revenant.
Doc Savage?
It's like the good guys or something. It's like... what's his name? It's got Russell Crowe, so Stu will never see it.
Nah.
Basically, looking like John Goodman, and is like a private eye in the 70s.
It's all the fish and chips over here he eats, I think.
Oh, yeah. And then there's...
Rabnose Games.
What's his name? Ryan, the blonde-haired guy from Drive.
Ryan Gosling?
Yeah, Ryan Gosling. Like he's the younger detective, and they get involved in some crazy case in Hollywood in the 70s.
Oh, that sounds like a Shane Black movie.
Yeah, the trailer actually got a pretty big reaction before The Revenant, but better than anything in The Revenant.
What happened to his Doc Savage film he was going to do?
Yeah, I know. I think it's kind of fallen by the wayside.
I heard Sony's real scared to pull the trigger on it because they think they'll get a costly bomb like John Carter.
Yeah. Don't spend so much fucking money on it. Seriously.
John Carter, I love John Carter, and I'm so glad they've got back the rights and are going to do another John Carter movie. I mean, Disney self-imploded. On John Carter. They completely screwed
it's not like that
marketing up and everything else, but it's a good film.
I loved it. I'm a huge fan of it, and I love the old Burroughs novels. And but I'm afraid I'm going to see the same thing happen to Doc Savage, where they make this expensive film and they spend too much money on them, like Stu said. And you know, it'll come out and nobody remembers this character because nobody reads anymore, and they certainly don't read old stuff. So it'll be another, you know, I'll go opening day and everybody from the nursing home will be there and nobody else, like when I saw The Shadow.
Well, we're faced with another Shadow, another Dick Tracy.
Yeah.
All of those things just completely fall apart because they don't understand what the original hook was for those stories.
Right. Now, I know Shane Black is a real serious Doc Savage fan, so he might do a great job with it. But he's also doing The Destroyer or Remo Williams. So, I think that's more of a go right now than Doc Savage, because I think they offered Doc Savage to Chris Hemsworth and he turned it down. So they're still looking.
It's because he's a dickhead.
Well, and can nobody do Modesty Blaze right? I mean, really?
No, they don't know how. And you don't even spend a lot of money on Modesty Blaze. You could do a $5 million movie in France and it could be great and they won't even bother. You know?
Yeah.
It Shadow doesn't have to cost more than The Raid or the Tony Jaa movies.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. I mean, it could be done right. Quentin Tarantino is not the person to do it, even though he owns the rights to it right now.
Right. Does he own the – he's still on the rights?
He kept them because he made a very cheap, very bad pilot for a television series. I think the rights still remain with him.
Because I was thinking that they could just do it with, like, Jason Statham as Willie Garvin and hire some actress to be Modesty Blaze, and it would kill, but oh well. They'll never get it because they don't understand it, and it's too many.
But what was the last Jason Statham film you saw?
Snatch.
Oh boy.
Snatch. There you go.
Yeah, it was. It really was.
Crank 2 on some level. Yeah,
Crank 2 was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Transporter was a great film. I liked it.
Yeah, I liked the first. The first Transporter is great. I didn't see Safe. I saw some people saying they liked Safe a lot.
Safe is all right. It's decent.
Yeah, it's decent.
What about that one he made with that fat one?
That's his biggest hit in a while.
Is it really?
Yeah, because he's now doing the big studio chick flick comedy. And I heard he was pretty good at it.
But again, he was a bit part in that. He wasn't the lead.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, I mean, Furious 7, you know, he's a sidekick. It's not a Statham movie, you know? Like,
right.
Was that Melissa McKeepa?
Maybe he's better in those roles. I mean, I don't know if it's just a paycheck for him, but they don't seem to be able to get him right as the star.
By the way, have any of you seen Jason Statham with Burt Reynolds and In the Name of the King?
No.
Yes.
God.
I hate to admit it. I have seen it.
Hey, it had choreography by Tony Ching, right?
Ching Su Tung. Yeah, yep. He did all the fights in it.
Jeez.
You just made me throw up a little bit in my mouth.
Yeah, it's a bad movie. I mean, when you got Burt Reynolds as your medieval king, you're in trouble.
When you got Burt Reynolds in it, you're in trouble, really.
Yeah, pretty much. It's sad to say. It ain't 1977 anymore.
Well, that movie is so bad, but it's entertaining in its badness.
Anyway,
especially Matthew Lillard, Jesus.
Oh
God, Shaggy. All right, we better bring it around to Creed, I think, and
all right,
wind this bad boy up soon.
All right.
Okay.
Well, I was going to say, what was one of the real flaws each person had here with it?
Well, let's not end on that note.
Yeah.
I'm not saying end on it. I'm just asking. I'm trying to drive the conversation further.
The love story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had the same problem, the romance.
Just
wasn't all there.
Mine was a soundtrack.
They could have given us another fight.
Yeah,
he felt like he didn't really prove himself as a fighter. We got, that one in Mexico, and we got that one against that Picarino, or whatever his name was, a Spiritino, or whatever, against that other trainer, and that was it. It was no real...
Yeah, he had Pretty Ricky at the end. And
I liked that it was actually filmed at my English football team's ground, Goodison Park, home of the Mighty Toffees, Everton, yeah. Even though I don't follow that stupid ass sport anymore, but I mean, I still like Everton. It's good to see it was at Everton. That was good. All right. Well, what about ratings? So let's rate this sucker, I guess.
Let's let a guest go first. Paul, what do you give this movie?
Oh, I mean, I have to give this movie 5 stars out of 5.
Okay.
Just because it hit all the right notes for me. I was thrilled, you know, to be able to get back in that Rocky vibe again. They did it right. They expanded the story, and yet they still touched on the history and all the things that made Rocky great. So for me, it's top notch.
Okay, John.
Give it a 7 out of 10. Although after seeing Star Wars and The Revenant this weekend, maybe I should give it an 8.
All right, Hannah.
I give it an 8. I think it's a very, very good, solid movie. I think it's one of the. I think it is. I need to watch it again. I've only seen it the once.
Mm.
But when I walked out of it, I was like, that is one of the better movies in the series,
yeah.
The Rocky series.
I'm going to give it an 8 also. Okay, now to test your brain a bit, or to rack your brain a bit, how are you going to rate all the Rocky movies? We've had all 7 of them.
Oh.
From least favorite. Now listen, least favorite, 2 favorites, from 7 up to 1. Who wants to go first?
So I go Rocky 5, I think, is my least favorite, and that gets a 6 out of 10.
All right.
Yeah, 5 out of 10. And then we go to the original. No, not the original yet. I think Rocky 3 with the Clubber Lang gets a 6 out of 10. Rocky 2 gets a 6 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Rocky 4 with Dolph Lundgren, that gets an 8 out of 10 for me, just because I was into the whole, you know, MTV montage thing that they had going in that movie.
It's a very entertaining movie.
I think for me, Rocky Balboa and Creed, you know, are 9s, and the original Rocky's a 10 out of 10.
Okay.
But that's a good ranking.
Who wants to go next?
I'll go.
Okay.
Okay, so my bottom one would be Rocky 5.
Yeah.
And I'd give it a 5 out of 10.
Or a V out of 10.
A V out of... Rocky V gets a V.
Yeah.
No, you know, and I like it on a certain sort of goofy level, but it's the weakest film out of the series. Right above that, I would put Rocky 2. I would give that one a 6. And the only, it's not a bad film at all. It's just that it's basically, and it has one of the better training sequences, I think. But I think out of the movies, it's basically Rocky 1, but Rocky wins this time, you know? And I'd rather just watch the first Rocky movie. After that, I'll do Rocky Balboa. Strong movie, like it. I'd give it a, I'd give that one a 6 out of 10 as well. But I like it a little more. I like it more than Rocky 2, but it's not one I go back and watch very often. I watch Rocky 2 probably less frequently. Rocky. I think after that, I'll go Rocky 4, which mm-hmm. I would give a 7 out of 10. I think it's highly entertaining. After that, Rocky 3, which I give an 8 because I love that movie. I think it's so much fun. And number one, of course, Rocky, 10 out of 10.
Okay. John.
Oh, wait. I didn't put Creed in there, but oh well. I kind of hard for me to rank it in there at this point.
I'm not putting it in the series.
Yeah, let's not put it in.
It's its own thing.
I don't think Paul molded it either.
Okay. The least favorite is Rocky 5, which I'd probably give like a 4. I really just don't like that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Rocky 2, which is a decent sequel, but it's a remake of the first one. It does have the best line in all of the films when Mickey says, "You're the worst thing that could ever happen to a fighter. Rocky became civilized." That's my all-time favorite line in the entire series. So I give that like a 6. And then I would go probably Rocky 4, which is a fun propaganda cartoon, and it's enjoyable as like July 4th viewing.
Absolutely.
I would give it like a probably a 6 or 7, maybe. It's just great fun. Rocky, after that, I would go Rocky Balboa because it's a good, inspiring movie and better than I expected it to be when it opened. So I'd probably give that like a 7. Rocky 3 was the first one I saw in a theater. Gets an 8. I just loved it. It's a crazy cartoon, kind of like 4.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one, Rocky, that's a 10. That's just like one of a kind.
Okay. All right. I am going to go... Okay, I'm going to go Rocky 5. I'm not going to give him out of 10, so I'm just going to... Same as I... What's it called? Okay. Rocky 5, Rocky 4. Rocky 3. Rocky Balboa. Rocky 2 second, and Rocky the first. I love Rocky 2. I don't get the dislike for it. I think it's fantastic.
I don't dislike it. It's just I would.
Well, it's compared to, I mean, why others are, I mean, I can't get why others are putting 4 over it. I just, well, I don't fucking get that.
Here's
at all.
Why.
I mean,
Rocky, goddamn Americans!
Rocky 2 is a natural progression. I mean, it kind of had to be there.
Yeah, you can't. It's you funny. Couldn't jump from 1 to 3, and you couldn't call 3 part 2 because
Yeah.
I think you have to be like a, I don't know, I think there's something about the 4th of July element of Rocky 4 that resonates with.
I think with Rocky 2, it's too soon. It just came too soon, and it almost seems like it's just right after the first one, and okay, here's where he wins. This is how you're going to feel, you know, and oh, look, he's got a literacy problem, you know.
Why is cereal?
I can't read. You know, it just gets a little, you know. Very 1979, I'll put it that way.
I still like that quite a bit. Right.
So that's I think, a pretty good wrap-up of those series, whole franchise.
Yeah.
Yes, there you have it, our final and only Rocky show.
Yes.
There you go, exactly. All right, well, we want to thank Paul.
See this again soon.
Yes, Paul.
Right. Cheers for having me on, I appreciate it, and, you know, go home and listen to the Rocky theme.
And if you need more boxing in your life, go to paulbishopbooks.com. Check out Paul's work. He writes detective stories, but check out the Fight Card series. And
Villainy Fist and Swamp Walloper are mine.
Yeah, there's a link on his site that says Fight Card. It'll go and take you to the Fight Card series created by Paul Bishop and Mel Odom. So
yeah,
check those out.
And go listen to our friends at Slycast, because they give literally a scene-by-scene rundown of every Rocky film. So, you get, I think it's about a 2.5 hour rundown of Rocky 5, and all the others, it is literally scene specific. They go by scene by scene. So go check out Slycast, our friends over there, Craig and the two Jeffs. Definitely worth a listen. So, okay, Paul, thanks for jumping on, mate.
Cheers, mates. See you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for coming back.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Adios.
And as for us, we do have an announcement about our secret show, the bonus show that we dropped in mid-December via the donation only. January 31st is the last day of purchase for that, okay? As of February 1st onwards, it disappears. It's gone. It's done. You'll never see it again. It'll never raise its ugly head. It is gone. We won't be sending it out after January 31st. January 31st, get it in. That is the last day literally to get it. I sound like a Victoria Market spruiker at the moment. You're trying to flog off some fucking pumpkins and stuff.
But if you've been on the fence about getting the show, get off it, because
like I said, don't come to us after January 31st. Take a shot every time I say January 31st. By the way, because we won't be seeing it out, unless you want to make a very sizable tax free religious donation to the MMC, like a ridiculous amount of money, you may get it. But after that,
Money talks, as usual.
It really does. But, for those who've got it, you basically got a bit of a rarity. You got the biggest MMC rarity in your time limit. Don't share it around, guys, all right? Don't be a bunch of twats and doing that. Just keep it to yourself,
all right? Don't give it to all those people who want everything for free.
Yes, that's right.
Some things have to be paid for in this world.
That's right. Okay, so anyway, first episode back for 2016. I won't be here next week. On next week's episode, it'll just be these two guys running the show. So until then, I say goodnight, guys.
Adios.
Mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MM Cowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time. Yeah.